Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight is a National Geographic explorer and a world-renowned space archaeologist, Dr. Sarah Parkak. When I hear the phrase space archaeology, my mind instantly goes to space exploration, the moon, Mars, maybe Stonehenge? Well, no, not so much. Instead, it's using satellite imagery to help see what we can't. Dr. Parkak's new book is called Archaeology from Space, How the Future Shapes Our Past. She's a professor of anthropology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and an Egyptologist, among so many other things. Dr. Parkak, thank you so much for coming in tonight. This is great.
Thank you so much for having me.
So space archaeology, obviously my mind goes right to the idea that this is about Indiana Jones on the moon. But it's not that. I mean, it really makes sense when you start reading the book about how technology is helping archaeology as we know it.
Right. So the term, the kind of more scientific term, is remote sensing for archaeology or satellite archaeology. And really, it's using different kinds of satellite imagery to look back at the surface of the Earth and try to find hints or clues as to where potential buried civilizations might be, or maybe even things like buried pyramids or tombs. And I joke with people that, like, I could have, you know, space archaeology is a fun name because really it's like mid-troposphere, multi-pixel image analytics. Right. And like, then all your viewers are asleep. So anything we can do to get people super psyched about science and the past, like, I will do whatever it takes.
It's amazing to think about. I want to get into the specifics and on what you do with everything that goes into remote sensing and filters and all that kind of stuff. Think Google Earth, but bigger. When you study this, when you study archaeology in school, this is still not part of the curriculum. Maybe it is today, but when you were going to school, this was not something that the professors were talking about in the classroom.
Correct. So I finished college almost 20 years ago. That feel strange saying that big number at this point. And, you know, at the time, certainly archaeologists were using aerial photographs and things like ground-based remote sensing tools that allow us to see under the ground. But really, the whole field of satellite archaeology or space archaeology, you know, it was still in its infancy or early adoption phase. But now it's changing. Now you go to a conference and almost every archaeologist is talking about satellite imagery.
It's amazing, too, because I was reading the book that really you can almost look back to some of the spy photos of the Cold War. And you've been able to access some of these things over time to really the beginning of archaeology, because they were mapping so many different things for these satellites, you know, for their own purposes of the Cold War. But they show so much. It's almost feels like that's the beginning of it.
That's right. You know, when we think about how much landscapes have changed, especially in places like the Middle East, you know, this big Cold War reconnaissance program called Corona, it allowed the U.S. to map lots of secret Russian bases 50 plus years ago. But what it ended up doing is capturing so many landscapes that have so drastically been altered today. And we archaeologists now are using these declassified satellite images to map and look at archaeological sites that, to a large part, you know, many of them have disappeared.
When you think about what you see, because we've all had the opportunity now to use Google Earth, whether to look at our own houses or to possibly look at the eight wonders of the world or whatever it might be. It's more than that. It's more than just sort of zooming in and saying, oh, that could be where a lost civilization is. You're using so many different heat maps, registers, archival footage. There's a lot that goes into this.
Think of it almost like a space-based CAT scan. So there's so much on the surface of our Earth that's so different, right? Different kinds of vegetation and soils, different kinds of landscapes. And there are millions, potentially tens of millions of archaeological sites, some of which may be partly visible on the surface, but for the most part, they're partly to completely buried. And what happens is when you have something like a buried structure beneath a field in England, what that buried structure does is it alters the health of the vegetation of what's above it. Or if it's in a desert in Egypt, it will alter, the soil absorbs moisture. And what we're able to do is we're able to look at different parts of the light spectrum, things that we can't see with our naked eye, but using algorithms and processing, we're able to make these completely invisible, slight chemical differences on the surface of the Earth pop out, and all of a sudden we're seeing the ghostly outlines of the structures that are buried below.
And not unlike archaeology as we know it, then starts the process of digging down and trying to find different artifacts that are going to show key components or the mysteries of civilizations that are long gone.
Yeah, so it's one thing to see something from space. And obviously, in some cases, we find things and we can't go to those places because it's too dangerous or it's too expensive. But we then, absolutely, we've got to get out. We've got to survey. We've got to excavate, to check, to make sure, you know, what time period does it come from? Are we seeing something from 500 years ago or 5,000 years ago?
When, you know, and I'm geeking out about this because it is something I think that you and I share, and I think a lot of people listening, that, you know, we were kind of turned on by archaeology from the action movies of the 80s and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones. And here you are in this interview with a brown leather jacket on. I mean, you kind of play the part, but as much as I joke around about it, that is, I think, for the modern archaeologist, there is some truth in looking at the way that archaeologists were portrayed in those 80s movies that got you interested in this.
I think, yeah, like all children of the 80s, you know, whether it was Raiders of the Lost Ark or Goonies or any of the big adventure movies, I mean, it's what we watch. Now, I think we all understand Indiana Jones is, of course, problematic today. You know, I do like dark brown leather, and you know, I figure kids today need a good female role model, and one that works with Indigenous peoples, not against them. But yeah, I can't help it. I was certainly intrigued and fell in love with the character. Actually, I had a chance to meet Harrison Ford a couple years ago, and he's completely unlike the movie character, but he was so kind and so generous. And there is a picture of us with a brown fedora that I'll treasure forever.
There's a great moment where he has to remind you as well that it was just a character.
Yeah, I admit I probably overly geeked out. I was just a little bit excited, but he completely forgave me. He's like, of all the people I've met, I forgive you for
there
this.
You
I get it.
Dr. Sarah Parkak is my guest. Archaeology from Space is the book, How the Future Shapes Our Past. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Dr. Sarah Parkak. She is the author of Archaeology from Space, How the Future Shapes Our Past. We're talking about remote sensing and using satellite imagery to help with archaeology as we know it. How do you learn this? Is this something like taking a six-week computer class and you figure it out? But for archaeologists, I would assume this becomes as important as the pickaxe.
So in order to become proficient in the use of satellite imagery, it's a matter of taking a series of college classes, so 12 to 14-week courses. You learn about the science and the physics of remote sensing. It's not, unfortunately, just as simple as learning how to use a computer program. You really have to understand what's going on at the level of the individual pixel. What is it in the light spectrum that's causing all these differences, whether you're looking at a type of plant or soil or water. And then we're coming into it with a really deep knowledge base, you know, whether you're looking for archaeological sites in Egypt or Iceland or Italy or Russia, everywhere the landscape's going to be different and the cultures are going to be different. So in some ways, it's almost like you're participating in a big CSI show where you have all these mysteries and these breadcrumbs and clues that lead you into being able to find lost sites.
A lot of the book and a lot of your stories about where you've been and what you've discovered. And I think about this because you can make the same, I think you hear this a lot with explorers, but with archaeologists, say, what else is there to discover? We've discovered it all. As a young person deciding what their future might be, archaeology is, you're like, well, you know, how much more can you discover about the pyramids? It's all been discovered. But that's not the case.
Yeah, so obviously I'm a nerd, and like the number one question I typically get asked is, how much is left to find in Egypt? And you know, the honest answer is, how long is a piece of string? I don't know, but I'm like, I am so going to use math to figure this out. So I calculated the total area and total volume of every known excavation in the Egyptian Delta from the last 150 years, figured out the percent of the sites that had been excavated. And in the Egyptian Delta alone, we've only excavated 1/1000th of 1% of the sites. And by the way, this is peer reviewed. No one challenged me on it. So take that. But then we found thousands upon thousands of other archaeological sites in Egypt that have absolutely not been excavated. And there are so many other sites that are buried beneath the ground. So I think at a minimum, we can suggest that for ancient Egypt, we've uncovered only 1% of the remains.
Wow. That's amazing to hear. And what are you looking for as an archaeologist? What's the golden, what's like the haul? Has it come across a piece of pottery, a jewelry, a structure? What is it from your mind that is the best haul when you're talking about archaeology?
When we excavate, we don't dig to find, we dig to find out. So what we do is we take thousands upon thousands of pieces of pottery and seeds and, you know, human remains and bits of architecture. And over the course of not just one season, but multiple excavation seasons, years and years at a site, we slowly over time unravel the mystery of what the site was, who lived there, who died there, why was that site important? And we, you know, archaeology is a hypothesis-driven science. So we ask questions, you know, how and why did this civilization grow or collapse? How or why did this city become a capital and then it fell out of use? How or why did this king come to power? And we use those questions to help drive how we design our fieldwork.
You say in the book, too, and this is a great quote, that archaeology is the hope machine for humanity. What does that mean?
So I look at the way the world is now, and we're obviously facing enormous challenges, whether it's climate change, immigration. It seems that demagogues are taking over the world, and it's hard to have hope for our kids and our grandkids, given everything that's going on. And what I think archaeology does is, you know, when you're standing in front of the pyramids or any archaeological site, or even in front of a museum case like at the Field Museum, you can't help but feel awe at the extraordinary artistic and architectural and cultural achievements of people in the past. And when you feel awe, you feel smaller, and I don't mean that in a good way. You see yourself in perspective, and all of a sudden you have empathy for these other places and these different ways of being and thinking. And when you have empathy, you're open to the way, different ways of existing and diversity. And then all of a sudden, you see the different ways of existing on this planet and all the value that so many people have and all that we could achieve if we maybe valued that a little bit more. So that's why I think archaeology is this hope machine. It allows us to get some perspective, and it allows us to value all the different ways of existing and perhaps to see that our way of existing isn't the right one.
Dr. Sarah Parkax, my guest. She's the author of Archaeology from Space, How the Future Shapes Our Past. And we're talking about technology and satellite imagery and how that's helping archaeology. It has to be the golden time for this science, because I would just assume that there has been advances in tools and obviously mapping over generations. But to get to a point where now you can use satellite imagery, and it has to be such a game changer for you to live and be an archaeologist at this moment.
I agree. We are absolutely in a golden age of archaeological discovery, whether it's through using satellites or aerial-based laser mapping platforms like LIDAR, which has allowed us to find tens of thousands of previously unknown sites in areas like Central America for the Maya or for Angkor Wat in Cambodia. Obviously, there have been amazing advances in underwater archaeology, in DNA studies, and learning how and when and where people moved across the planet over time. We keep finding earlier and earlier evidence for Homo sapiens. You know, it seems that there's now evidence for us going back over 300,000 years. So every week, I'm just blown away by the headlines. I can't ever wait to get up in the morning and see what archaeologists have found next.
When with the science, and when you have this such advancements in the technology, does everything else go with it? Are there more research opportunities? Are there more resources allocated because this technology is showing new excavation sites or places that might be? Does it all move up when technology kind of gets better?
Yeah, I wish there were more resources. That tends to be one of our biggest challenges with funding cuts. But what it allows us to do is be much more targeted in terms of where we're looking. It allows us to gather a lot more information. And now with advances in computing and big data and machine learning, we're applying those tools and technologies to the work that we're doing. And it allows us to get through a lot more information a lot faster. And now with more limited resources, with other challenges, you know, we just have to be smarter about the work that we're doing.
You can't be like in Indiana Jones where they're digging in the wrong place. You can't do that anymore.
No more digging in the wrong place. We're done.
At the end of the book, you talk about the next generation of archaeologists, and more importantly, how the public and how crowdsourcing is going to become much more important to this science. How does crowdsourcing or the public or someone sitting at home on their computer going to help archaeologists?
So the bulk of what I do and my colleagues, you know, it's not like we're looking at satellite imagery and finding things every 2 seconds. I wish that were the case. This is science. Science takes a long time and is hard, and we get a lot wrong. But with citizen science, you have the opportunity to go online. And so I started a platform called Global Explorer, and it's an online platform that allows anyone in the world to look at satellite imagery and help us find archaeological sites. We started in Peru, and to date, we've had almost 90,000 users from over 120 countries, and they found over 20,000 potential archaeological sites in Peru, and over 700 of them are massive sites.
How do you keep up with that? Because obviously you have to check them and make sure and do everything that goes into it, but I would just assume that it's just more data points, raw data points coming at archaeologists in the science. And with the limited resources, how do you keep up with it?
It's hard to keep up. I mean, you don't just want to put dots on maps, because a dot on a map doesn't tell us much. But what we do is we parse through the data, we carefully input it into databases, and then we share it with experts who can really say, like, okay, that's a super important site, or that's like a farm enclosure wall, and it's important to us, but maybe doesn't tell as big of a story. So at the end of the day, we have to pick and choose where to work, because there are only so many of us. But hopefully in the future, maybe we get citizen archaeologists more engaged, and we get communities going out and documenting more sites, because ultimately we need the help.
You know, when you think about it, and we'll wrap here, but when you think about where you're at in your career and to be in the forefront of this science and to really be one of the experts and the noted scientists that are using this kind of material, when you think back to getting back into archaeology, or when you got into it in the first place, is this where you thought you would be? You are an archaeologist and explore everything that Indiana Jones was.
Yeah, I never thought I would be a public person. I certainly didn't get into archaeology to do what I'm doing now, but I certainly hope I'm using my platform. I'm showing the next generation of women and girls, they too can do what they want. They can be archaeologists, they can be scientists. I'm trying to use my platform to promote and support indigenous scientists around the world, because it's not that you need to make space at the table. You need to make the tables bigger or build new tables. And I don't necessarily have all the answers for how big the table should be, but infinite. So I guess I didn't think I could do this, but I just want to use my public persona to try to inspire the next generation, because they're going to do it much better than I've done.
Well, it's a fascinating read, Archaeology from Space, How the Future Shapes Our Past. Dr. Sarah Parkak is the author. She's also a professor of anthropology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and a National Geographic Explorer. A pleasure to meet you. Thank you for writing this book, and continued success in the field of archaeology.
Thank you so much.